everyone. Welcome back to the Queens of Social Work podcast. I'm your co-host, Queen P.
And I'm your co-host, Queen H.
We invite you all to join us this week as we share, laugh, cry, and learn through our experiences as women of color who happen to be social workers.
So let's get started.
So we have a treat for you guys today in continuation of our career series that we started last season. We have someone we want to introduce and bring on to really talk about different aspects of the social work field and what you can go into when you choose to become a fabulous social worker.
Exactly. Thank you, Queen H. Today we have a treat for you guys. We're talking to Marthea Pitts, aka Queen M. Marthea Pitts is the founder and lead consultant of the MSW Coach, a social impact design firm. She helps corporations and individuals engage in social impact and corporate social responsibility work. She's a 3-time award-winning workforce development professional and macro social worker. Okay, sis! Marthea is a current PhD educational leadership candidate at the Flora Agricultural and Mechanical University located in Tallahassee, Florida. She has experience in nonprofit, for-profit, corporate, governmental, K-12 education, and higher education settings. Marthea was recently featured on LinkedIn detailing her journey to become a social entrepreneur. Her professional mission is to help individuals achieve lifelong self-sufficiency through education and career goal achievement. Welcome to the Queen Social Work Podcast, Queen M.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It is a pleasure. As I was saying before we hit record, all right, invite me to the podcast. I love it.
Thank you for coming. Yes, we love to reach out to our fellow social workers that's on, you know, IG everywhere and kind of get different takes because they hear us talk enough, but I think they need to hear other Black women or Black men social workers doing it in the field and different aspects. Because when we go to school, they only talk about you could be a case manager. You can be a therapist, that kind of thing, but no other aspects of social work that you can do. So we like to get everybody's take. And with that said, just to start out, I know we did a little bit of your introduction, but if you can go into more detail about what your credentials are or certifications, if any, and just tell us a little bit more about your background.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be a career coach if I didn't give you my elevator speech. I know I was introduced by Queen P, but I'm Marthea Pitts. I'm known as the MSW coach on the social work streets, and I help social workers make the pivot from case management to macro social work roles. As of today, I've helped well over 126 social workers make the pivot since I've officially been keeping count. And so what macro work is because I know every social worker is not exposed to macro and what it is and all of the things, because I always thought of it as just prevention focused work. But what macro is where we work to repair large scale systemic issues. What a lot of that looks like is national, international work. I also include statewide work. So anything that's around an initiative to bring awareness or fix a problem, I consider that as macro. And I am on Instagram at @_MSWcoach. And as it was shared in my intro, I am a 3-time award-winning workforce development career counselor and macro social worker. So before I got on Instagram as the MSW coach, I helped hundreds of people in my city get jobs. That's what I do. If I don't know how to do nothing else in life, I know how to get a job. So my credentials, I have a master's of social work degree, and that's it. I ain't got no license. I don't need a license to be a macro social worker. And that debunks one of the biggest myths out on the social work street, is that you need a license to do macro work. You know, you don't. And so I am a macro social worker by profession. I'm not currently working on full time in my business, and I'm a current PhD candidate. But my last macro job was with one of the oldest think tanks in the country, where I was working directly with mayors and their executive leadership teams to help the them address collective impact issues and design equitable career pathway programs and opportunities for historically under-resourced youth and young adults. So what that looked like was a lot of me taking my frontline case management, workforce development, career counselor experience, and shedding light on what the systemic issues are, and how there are not equitable opportunities for historically under-resourced youth and young adults, right? And I'm gonna get on my soapbox for just a little bit. In workforce development, there's the status quo way of doing things where they put people into occupations or training programs where people are still have to rely on the systems that we work in. So I worked in a welfare transition workforce development connected program. And so even though we were putting them in training and you're supposed to be helping people get become self-sufficient, my career seekers were still having to rely on the SNAP and TANF benefits because they weren't making enough. So it was in that job that I got a battery in my back. Really, and it's still there to this day. a battery in my back about getting into larger spaces to change the service delivery policy around workforce development programs. Because in the region where I worked, it's largely made up of people that look like me, and I am a Black person. And I got the battery in my back one time. Well, after my colleague had pulled some data from another region where the people look very different than people in my region, and they were doing all kind of activities, they were exposed to higher level occupations and pathways. I'm like, why is that? What's going on here? Our people want to do those types of things too. And so from there in my cubicle, I created a plan. I didn't know none about a license. I knew I never wanted to be clinical, but I created a plan using the job search strategies that I taught my participants, my career seekers rather, and I pivoted to macro work. So I'm gonna stop there because I don't mind marketing myself, right? That's the biggest issue also that I see with social workers. Y'all don't talk enough about what you do professionally. That's why people in the world think we are only case managers. And I ain't gonna name the other thing because I said in 2023, I'm gonna stop naming stuff. But you know the other things that they only
I love it. Thank you, Queen M. So a few things came up for me while you were speaking, Queen M. The fact that you are a PhD candidate at Florida Agricultural and Mechanical University. Now, let me tell you something. That school there in particular got plenty programs that's free. Okay, a lot of little certifications and stuff. So I'm gonna just plug them real quick. Now, I don't know them and they don't know me and they could run me a few dollars, but I do know that if people are looking to put tools in their toolbox, that's a great university. It's a great place to start. They have online courses and stuff like that. Anyway, I digress. So I love that you started your business from your cubicle, okay, on the 9 to 5. Sometimes we need to find time to do that. Today, I didn't even take lunch, okay? I was grinding from sundown to sun up and all that. And I didn't take a moment for myself, but you know what? Taking a moment and being creative in that space like you were, using the skill set you already had, something you was already teaching people, baby, and develop the whole business out of it, I'm here for that, okay? So I was gonna ask, do you work directly with clients? But it sounds like your clients are like systems, it sounds like. Can you tell me more about that? Like, how would you get a job? How would I, honey, get a job at the mayor's office? Okay, that's what I want to know. Like, how do you get the clients?
Yeah, so, well, let me clarify. So in my job as a case manager, as a workforce development career counselor, I created a plan to get my first macro job because I've had 5 of them, somewhere between 4 and 5. So I created a plan to get my first job. I landed the job as the director of the Global Teen Mom Learning Pathway, where I was responsible for creating an online high school diploma program for pregnant parents and youth and young adults, which is my population. Fast forward, it was in that job where I was like, I am making the most money I ever made in my career. This is why I went and got a master's degree. And then also it was largely about the fact, like, I am really creating the change that my career seekers so desperately wanted in my city, but it wasn't available to them, right? So as pregnant and parenting youth and young adults, In my city, there was no programs that catered to them as being working adults, meaning they have to work to provide for their children and their families. So a lot of them, all of them would say to me every day, Ms. Pitts, I don't want a GED, I want a high school diploma. And so our program was only designed to put them in GED programs, and that is not what they wanted. So really my journey to pivot out of case management started with me having a battery in my bed, like, y'all want a high school diploma? I'ma find a job where I can make certain that y'all get high school diplomas since they want to put y'all in GED programs, right? And so again, though, once I started looking at the jobs and I realized like, oh, wow, I can make more money outside of case management. It then became a dual purpose to save my own life because I was only making $37,100 in that job. Right. I was $100 above the poverty line. My coworkers couldn't even qualify for the welfare transition SNAP benefits that we were helping to administer. But it was in that first director job, I was like, how can I help more of the social workers that are in my city that I've worked with right alongside with for the last 5 years? How can I help them get jobs like this? Because what I didn't say is, the same years that I was on the front lines as a case manager, which was around the time of 2017, that was my second to last year in that job. My city was identified to be the most economically segregated city in the nation. So just hearing that alone tells you what you need to know. So I was in that job. I was like, how can I help my colleagues make money like I am and also still do mission-driven work? Because back home, because I had to relocate for that job. But back home, I had colleagues who had been doing case management for 20, 30 years, who was barely making $25,000 a year, right? And so I would sit in my office and look out the window and be like, how can I help more social workers get into jobs like these? And at that time, I did not create the MSW Coach, my business, but I started brainstorming about what I could do to help. Right. And so it was like a year or so after that, me getting in my own way, like, I don't want to do career coaching. But then I eventually opened the MSW Coach after a strong conversation with one of my friends who used to work side by side with me on the front lines. And she was like, Pitts, is nobody better than you because you done it. And so that's when I started the MSW Coach. How I get my participants is organic marketing. I market on Instagram. That's where I am. So a lot of what I have, well, everything has come from me marketing on Instagram or either someone referring me to something else. But referrals are not even heavy for me. It's the organic marketing. I've collaborated a lot with other organizations to present to their like audience. And again, that came from me knocking on a door like, hey, I'm passionate about helping people get jobs. Can I collaborate with you? Now with my work, I still, my first 3 years in my business, because this is year three, I still was getting macro jobs. I've worked in policy at a R1 university as a researcher for a statewide racial equity initiative where we traveled the state and trained the executive leaders and board members of the early learning education system. We call it ELC, but we traveled the state, and that was before the murder of George Floyd. And we were talking, teaching them about progress and retrenchment. What does systemic institutionalized racism look like? All of the things, helping them to design equitable program systems, even for this, not just for the students and the parents, but also for their employees. And then from there, I went on to work in policy. So I'm still like brainstorming my business. I'm not fully out there, all of the things. But to answer your question, because I know that was a lot, because I had two other macro jobs after that, but a lot of it is through word of mouth, but heavy, heavy organic marketing. I'm on Instagram every day, because I believe that social workers are the answer to the issues of the world. And so I'm on a mission to help more social workers get into macro spaces, because it wasn't until my last macro job that I was like, I can't be the only social worker in these rooms, because believe it or not, like, not everybody is concerned about the people. It all boils down for a lot of the key decision makers. It all boils down to the bottom line, and it does not include the people. And so I think that we as social workers, there's nobody better than us. We would love for these organizations, these policymakers, all of the things, depending on what type of organization you want to work in, we would love for them to center the voices of the people experiencing the problem, but it doesn't always happen. And so with my macro jobs, I found them using the same strategies I teach social workers. But with my business, it's heavy Instagram marketing.
First of all, yes to everything that you said. So many things ran through my head as you were talking. So hopefully I can remember everything I want to say. If not, by the end of this, I'm going to say what I'm going to say. Kudos to you, because the disrespect that they show social workers in some states, the pay rate is disgusting. So I am going to share this. This is, look, breaking news, because we ain't shared nothing. But I did move recently. And I'm in another state. I'm no longer in New York. News to all the listeners. Yes, guys, I'm no longer in New York. But when I left, one of the things that I said is when I leave, y'all not going to disrespect me and pay me less, because I've made a certain amount in New York. And you can tell me cost of living, but that is bullshit, because you're going to pay me for all this experience I got. That's first and foremost. That's first and foremost. Okay. Second, when you were talking about just working and starting to think about your business, right? I think that is the beginnings for so many people, and people don't realize and talk about it enough, right? Because even this thing that P and I are doing, we were joking around at work talking about talking to the people, because I like to run my mouth, right? I like to talk. P is the planner. I'm not saying I'm not a planner, because I am a planner, but she is like the thinker, the idea person, like the writer. She's good with all of that. And I like to talk, okay? And I like to hype shit up, okay? I'm like, get your paper, go get your money. Like, I'm all about that. Whatever you got to do to get this bag. So get every certification that you can get. If you want to go all the way, get your licenses. At the end of the day, you don't know where your career is going to take you, right? Because you can have a plan, but every experience that you have is valuable. And every experience that you had was valuable, leading you to this point. Nothing is ever wasted. And that is the thing that I always like to tell young social workers, but people in general, everything that you're learning is valuable. You have to do it. I appreciate everything that you have said. And I'm not going to go on too long, because there's more that we need to hear from you, right? Obviously. But I love it. And I like the fact that you are a social worker. Okay. You said, no, bitch, y'all coming with me. Okay. You got to get these dollars. And P knows I'm about getting this bag. Because the thing is, you can care about the people and still get your bag, right? Because it is your blood, sweat, and tears that are going into the people. Your good peace of mind, that one last nerve you got going into the people. So you should get paid for that. Why should I be traumatized and not get paid for the therapy that I need to receive after working for the people, okay? And you're right. The people that are in this work that are governmental, because I'm gonna talk about those people, because I have to interact with those people in the current position that I am in. And whatever that is, people who are making the rules, there are people who do not care about people, because the bottom line is the bag. It is not the people. So there needs to be more social workers in the room. There needs to be more helping professionals in the room who are thinking about, yes, we have to think about the bag, because you do, because things need to be paid for. But how are we going to utilize that to help the people? Because if people were putting people first, we wouldn't be in this bullshit now. Okay. That's all I got to say about that. So anyway, I digress. And I told you I like to talk. So see, this is why we work, okay? This is why she work, because she got to rein me in sometimes. So you talked about macro work. So I don't need you to go in too much in the depth, but the difference for people, because there's three levels of social work practice, right? Micro, meso, and macro. Can you tell us a little bit about micro and meso and, you know, how that works for people and why for you it was important that people do more macro work? And I think you kind of said it, but just a little tidbit more.
Oh, yeah, I could talk all day. But okay, so I want to be clear, because some social workers love to be technical, because, you know, everyone is not pro macro. The definitions that I give are based on the jobs, the actual job market, because a lot of social workers are working from the academic definitions and standards, and that don't help you when you're looking for a job. That's why people don't know how to find macro jobs. So micro, how I define it, is as one-on-one work with your participants. Well, how I teach people how to distinguish or identify if it's a micro job is if it's case management work. If you are one of many social workers on staff, that's a micro job. So it's a lot of direct service that can be in clinical. It can be non-clinical, because I was a non-clinical case manager. It can be in school settings. It can be in hospitals. You know, my medical social workers, they love to come through my program. It can be if you are working with seniors, like the populations are endless, but it's the one-on-one case management delivery of services. How I define meso work is community level. So I usually define it as, let's say there is a group of residents in a community and they see a need as far as food insecurity, and they want to start a community-based food pantry, and they do that for themselves separate apart from like a nonprofit or something like that. I consider that to be meso level work because it's community centered, right? You can't necessarily go to another state and access that same food bank or food pantry. So community centered work, a lot of your grassroots efforts are meso level work, and there's tons of jobs in meso level work. And I already defined macro, but and I'm sorry, Queen H, I forgot the second part of your question. I should have wrote it down.
I think I said, oh Lord, I don't even know what I said.
You were asking about.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Oh, child, now it's too much pressure now. You know my mind. I think what you were getting at is, how do you get from micro to macro? Like, how did that transition take place? That you were asking about the difference and the different levels, and you asked her to explain more about, you know, she already talked about the macro a little bit, but you wanted more information about the macro, just in terms of how she got there from micro work.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. So in my MSW degree program, I went to a social work administration focused program. My program was not macro. So social work administration is like preparing you for working your local social service, nonprofit organization, typically more like a supervisory leadership uptight role, but everybody starts off in case management, right? Little note, that's also the thing. A lot of social workers don't know the difference between social work admin work and macro social work. So I also break that down to people because I want them to understand what it looks like in the workforce. So for me, I left my program being exposed to conversations about policy level work, about being a watchdog, the different key actors when it comes to policy change, and really being encouraged to create lasting change. My social work professors never referred to it as macro level work. It was just based off of the principle that really is the center of the MSW program at FAMU is Sankofa, about I'm going to do it layman's terms. I know I'm not going to do it any justice, but it's basically like giving back to the village, to the community, making certain that you are paying it forward. So I was always exposed to conversations like that. And so we had a guest speaker one day, and he came in. He was a graduate of our program, and he was talking about the fact the day that he realized that he was a prevention-focused social worker rather than an intervention-focused social worker. And at that time, I was a coordinator at a DV shelter, and I was like, that's what type of social work I am, because this work is hard. It's hard to come in and fix stuff that has been the way for 30, 40 years, like backbreaking hard work. Right. And so when he said that, I went from going forward, I've been saying I'm a prevention focused social worker. I want to prevent people from even coming into these systems. Right. I said, I want to be a part of that work. So my transition was based off of, I wanted to prevent my career seekers that I had served prior to that job, even my DV, like I was hired because of my workforce development background for that DV coordinator role. I wanted to prevent people from coming in. So that was how I made, why I made the transition to prevention focused jobs. I didn't start calling it macro until I got on the internet as the MSW coach. And everybody, every social worker that I encountered was referring to it as macro. And when I looked it up, I was like, that's what I do. I had, by that time, I had two jobs as a macro social worker. And so I say that because there's a lot of social workers that don't know what it is. So that's how I made my transition. I wouldn't say either that I've never done meso level work, but never formally. I've done it informally. Before I got on the internet with the MSW coach, I was like testing out my boldness, and I would do community workshops around resume writing, getting a job, all of the things with like local organizations. And then once I did like a few trial runs and the programs that were being managed by the social workers that I knew, and then like in churches in my area, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to hit the ground running. But I've never had a formal job in meso. I just went straight to macro because I'm like, I want to be a part of changing the policies and making certain things are different, because the way it was going is not working.
Can I just say, a light bulb went off in my head when you said prevention focused work rather than intervention focused work, because that's exactly what so many of us learn in social work school. I went to a school that had a track for gerontology. You know, you're going to end up in case management. I had a school that went up in a track for like child welfare and like substance use. And like there's a generalist practice focus, right? There's a idea that you're going to go into this work helping individuals on a one-to-one level, managing their cases, making phone calls, making appointments, managing their lives and those day-to-day, you know, tasks. And never do you really hear about social work administration and all those things that are encompassed by it. You never really hear that. I'm so glad that you went to a school that had that to offer, because so many social work schools do not, you know? So we do need to be thinking on a larger scale because we're capable. And it's also, like Queen H said, these dollars on those levels, okay? Because you can't do the dollars with the case management all the time. You're gonna have to get 2, 3, 4 jobs. Okay, so you talked to us about how your experience was moving from, you know, micro to macro, and your training and developing your program as a result. Do you think consciously about the intersectionality of who you are playing a role in getting from one practice level to another? I mean, I don't think you really consider it like that, getting from one practice level to another. But in your experience in general as a provider, because you are a provider, you're providing services, you're providing your work, what do you think about the role that your intersectionality plays? Female, Black, et cetera? You know, how does that play a role if you think about it at all?
I honestly don't think it plays a role in it. Because I have been so strategic in building my professional brand that people want to hire me the minute they see my resume. My last job I got, I didn't even finish the application because I was like, oh, I'm content in my policy job. I'll just say I was filling it out just for fun. And then I stopped. And then next thing I know, I got an email for an interview. Right. That's just how strong my brand is, because I've been so strategic about the jobs that I take, the experiences that I have, and how I craft my resume. It's a no-brainer when people see my marketing materials. I don't really know. Now, of course, I'm not oblivious to the fact that there are biases in the world and all of the things, especially just, you know, with where we are in this country. But I don't think it plays a factor in it because I've never had like a, and I might offend somebody, like a token DEI job or nothing like that. I'm a subject matter expert. I built my brand around that.
No, I get what you're saying. I think though that, you know, and not to put words in your mouth, but you did say that one of the things that you did do was speak to one of your coworkers and compare the fact that this section of, or this region had better outcomes for people that looked a certain way versus the people that look like you and your region. So I think sometimes we don't think about it, that there is that intersectionality that kind of pushes us to work harder for something than other times. And I think that was something that put a battery in your black, because it's like, why my people out here suffering? You know what I mean? And those people aren't.
Thank you for saying that, because I did write that down in my notes and I forgot to say it. Now that does fuel my work, because when I am in rooms with workforce development practitioners ranging from higher ed, K through 12, government, all of the things, they are talking about jobs from the standpoint of benefiting employers. They're not talking about it from the standpoint of benefiting the people. Right. So I am the opposing voice in the room who's coming in with a passion about economic development. That's my goal. Right. But I have to wear their mask and come in like I'm concerned about workforce development. I'm not concerned with that. I'm concerned about people getting a job to be able to fund their lives so they become self-sufficient. And that's what I teach my career coaching clients, right? We have to sometimes acclimate to their thing and speak their language, but still be the voice in the room. So yeah, you are right. So thank you for that reminder. Most definitely it fuels my work, because when everyone else is in there talking about businesses and incentives for employers, and we're going to need mass hiring, and the fact that infrastructure jobs are going to be a huge in 2023, because I've been in roundtable discussions with people from the White House. I don't care about that. Will these jobs last? Will they be able to have them once this work is done? And what is the pathway for that? Where does this job lead? Is it just an entry-level job where they'll stay there until retirement making the same tired salary, or is there opportunities for advancement? So yeah, thank you for that reminder, Queen H.
Of course, of course. Because I think, you know, as women, but as also as Black women, we are nurturers, we care for others, and we want others to win. But I think there's something that happens when you see that there's no equity in a space for people that look like us. And so it makes you like, fight more. And it's something that I've always said, even in the work that I do now, is like, listen, I'm going to advocate for everyone. Whatever I'm doing is going to be for everyone. However, I'm going to be particularly extra when the person on the other end looks like me, because working in healthcare, we know the disparities and what happens for people that look like us. So I definitely agree with you. And so now, with that said, in the next 5 years, where will the MSW coach be? We like to name it and claim it. So go ahead.
I'm all about having a career plan. I have one, but I don't know. Because I am a believer and God be telling me different stuff every day. Because this, the MSW coach, yes, it's my mission. But I mean, it's my love, but it's a mission that was given to me. So as far as what I'll be doing in 5 years, I have ideas sketched out in my mind, but I honestly don't know, because every day I'm getting more and more clarity around what it is I'm supposed to be doing, which I believe extends way greater than social workers, right? I have worked with non-social workers who are interested in change-making roles and positions, but this work has been given to me by God. So I just follow his lead, because there has been many times that I wanted to abandon the MSW coach and go sell a widget. Like, just give me a product. Let me just sell that and don't have to put my face on the internet. Because it's hard to get people to unlearn all of the wrong stuff they've learned all of their life. It's so hard to get y'all social workers to move, not y'all too. But it's so hard to get social workers to move. Oh my goodness. But 5 years from now, I know we'll be working with a much larger target audience. I know it will be that. I don't know what it will look like. I don't know. Hopefully I'll be on somebody's stage and just come out of my house 4 times a year and do something and then go back in. That's the goal.
I claim that for you. We're going to receive that. You got your TED Talk popping, everything popping. They're going to have to line up and get on a waiting list to see you. I'm going to claim that for you. We're going to manifest all of that, Queen M. So as we wrap up, what is important for you to let the people know about you, about your work, about anything you want to share as we wrap up?
What I want them to know about me is that I'm truly committed to this work. Like, I want to see everyone win, because there are more than enough jobs and opportunities out there for everyone to thrive. And more than just me, because this work is way bigger than me, is that I want social workers specifically, because we're focusing on social workers. I want y'all to understand that life doesn't always have to feel like a hustle. You don't always have to work 2, 3, 4, 5. I talked to somebody the other day. They said they work 5 jobs. It doesn't have to be that way. I know that's the norm in the social work community, but it doesn't have to be that way. I also want people to understand that case management jobs in the grand scheme of the workforce ecosystem are entry-level positions. You're supposed to get in that job, get your experience, and move on. That's why I specialize in working with social workers with 2+ years of experience, because many of you are staying there for 10, 15, 20, 30 years, right? And I've been schooled by the OG. I ain't gonna call her name. And she was just like, a lot of us stay in the position so long because we are fearful that no one else will provide the quality of care to our participants the way that we do. And my response to that is, the way the workforce development system is designed is there will always be qualified social workers coming into the field to replace you. You are not supposed to stay there forever. And also, a lot of the times what social workers tell me is that they don't know how to move out of the positions. So I just want you all to know that there is correct career information out there, and you really have to arm yourself with it so you can make well-informed career decisions, because there is tons of misinformation that floods the social work streets. I have my whole thoughts as to why, because we got to remember, workforce equity is an issue. It's a real issue. It's not just in other professions. It's also in social work, right? So you have to arm yourself with correct career information to make well-informed decisions. And I'm going to leave it there. And y'all read what you want to read in that. But get your experience. Move on to where you want to be. And don't stay. Don't get stuck. Whatever you do, fight for yourself. Fight for yourself. That's what I tell people all the time on my platforms. Like, your life does not have to end in case management.
Exactly. First of all, thank you for saying that, because I think when we go to social work school, like P said, some schools have a clinical track, some have an administrative track, right? And if you pick one, you will never learn nothing about the other, right? And vice versa. That's it, right? And I think when people don't know, they don't do. And so having an opportunity to meet up with someone like you, or an older social worker that has moved through the system in different ways, is important, right? For those people worried about having qualified people come in to do case management, mentor somebody, nah? Mentor a social worker. If you're worried about qualified people, move on to your next position and come back and mentor the social worker. And you will then find a social worker who has the qualifications or the energy that you want. But we can't stay in the same position. Now, that also goes to say, there's some people who just want to be case manager. They want an easy job, or quote unquote, what they think is an easy job. No responsibility. They like working one-on-one. That's your business. If you want to do that, that's fine. But I think a majority of social workers are looking for ways to move in and out of the system and move up and around and whatever that may be. And so utilizing the skill set that you're going to highlight for them if they reach out to you or when they reach out to you is so important, because you're learning so many different things. You can parlay anything that you experience into something new. You sure can. Because when you work in case management, you work with everybody. Pregnant, DV, substance abuse, this, that. You get everybody. You get a melting pot. So you can take that and go somewhere else with that. So thank you for saying that. And so with all that said, how can the people them reach you? How can the people reach you?
The best way to reach me is through my website at macroandpaid.com. M-A-C-R-O. And is spelled out A-N-D-P-A-I-D, because we're making money in these jobs while changing the world. But that is that's my main homepage. It gives you all of the links to me on social media. My home base, though, is Instagram. You will see me on there every day in some way, shape, form, or fashion, talking about helping people get jobs. So I encourage you to follow me on Instagram at @_MSWCulture. Just visit macroandpaid.com. The links are there. But you can connect with me on LinkedIn. If you want to look at my experience, go ahead. Do your due diligence. Look at the places where I work and the roles that I've held. But and I also have a weekly podcast where I release episodes, but all of that is at macroandpaid.com. And I also have a free e-course. It's my labor of love to y'all. If y'all only knew how long it took me to create that e-course, please go download it. Download it and arm yourself with the basic information that you need to learn about what macro is, what the career opportunities is. I even talk about salaries because y'all love that. I think I give y'all some job titles because social workers love a good job title. But go get the e-course.
That's right. Thank you so much. You are our kind of people, okay? First of all, you just gave all the information and you like, listen, we about getting this paper, but also skilling up, please. So we will make sure to include that so y'all can find that in the show notes and go and educate yourself, okay? Go ahead. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It truly is an honor. When I got a message, I'm like, as long as you don't want me to talk about clinical stuff, because I don't know about that. Yes, sign me up. So thank you again for the invite.
It was great, great, great to have you today, Queen M. We're going to have you come back, you know, and give us some pointers and whatnot. Thank you so much for your time.
If you guys want to connect with us on social media, you can follow us on Twitter at the Queens of Social Work Pod, or on Instagram at the Queens of Social Work. If you want more information on the topic we discussed today, feel free to check out our show notes or email us at thequeensofsocialwork@gmail.com. We'd really appreciate it if you rate, review, and follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening.